Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, we're joined right now by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, also an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, also a boxing analyst for DAZN, also host of the Crossover NBA Show podcast, also host of the SI Boxing podcast with Chris Mannix. My man is really busy, and he's back. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, Jim?
How you doing, man?
Glad that the 50-week season has finally wound down.
My man, I would imagine you are, and this always goes back to the conversation you and I had way back in the day when you would appear on my TV show daily, and you would talk about, man, you know what's important to me? Balance, quality of life, and yet you are grinding harder than anybody right now. All right, so Chris, go back to Friday night. What did you make of the game overall, and in particular, what Jimmy Butler and the Heat did when it would have been so much easier to fold and just go home?
Yeah, and having been in the bubble as long as I was, I had seen teams in similar positions, you know, kind of bail out in a way, or at least not, you know, get going when it got tough. Because, you know, it's a daunting task to be down 3-1, especially to a team like the Lakers. So as impressive as it was to see the Heat come out strong the way they did, it was more impressive to watch them come back after giving up a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was kind of the moment you would have expected Miami to crumble, with LeBron, you know, sort of playing the role of Tiger Woods on a Sunday, just ready to close them out. But they rallied from that, and, you know, Jimmy Butler went punch for punch with LeBron and finished it off. But even after that, Jim, you know, you could tell that the Heat left everything on the floor. I mean, whether it was from how they played, the amount of minutes that they played, or even watching a guy like Butler after the game kind of walk very slowly off the podium, step gingerly. I mean, he had gone through so much in the last couple of weeks physically to get through to this point. You just had a feeling that that was their championship, that not folding when people expect them to do was their big opportunity.
Chris Mannix joining us. I agree with you, which is why last night I think that when the Lakers came in locked in the way they were, there was nothing Miami was going to be able to do to hold off that onslaught, especially since they had left it all out there the game before. You know, Chris, when you look at the Lakers, though, it's really easy to look at them right now and say, of course they were going to win a title. But if you go back to the start of last season, and more than a year ago, when there was that suggestion that Frank Vogel might be replaced very quickly, that LeBron was coming off the worst injury of his career, that Anthony Davis was unproven in high-pressure playoff situations, they had all those new faces they had to incorporate. Like, how sure of a thing was it back then that the Lakers were going to win it all?
Oh, I don't think it was a sure thing at all. And, you know, there are countless Lakers fans right now claiming to have known it was, but show me the receipts. Like, I don't believe you, Laker Nation. I don't believe that in, you know, the spring you were all in on Frank Vogel after Vogel spent 2 years in Orlando and got fired. I don't believe that you were this, you know, big believer in Dwight Howard's ability to make an impact or Rajon Rondo's ability to make an impact. I don't even believe, frankly, that you were 100% sure about LeBron James. I mean, he was 35 years old, or in his 35th year season, coming off a year where he played 55 games, the fewest of his career, had the most significant injury of his career. So you had every reason to be optimistic that they'd be better with Anthony Davis, a legitimate top five player. But please, like, I don't want to hear it from Laker fans that this was inevitable, that the skeptics out there were just Laker haters or LeBron haters. I mean, give me a break. This team was, at one point, Jim, in July, they had three players on the roster. Like, remember, they waited out Kawhi Leonard and then had to deal with NBA leftovers. I mean, Rondo played great in these playoffs, but where were these Laker fans back in February when, you know, the Darren Collison was being courted like the girl you couldn't get in high school? Like, it was just, it's crazy to think that this was all, you know, preordained back in September, October, when that couldn't be any further from the truth.
So right. So right, Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so Chris, when you talk about LeBron, we see, I mean, to your point, entering this season at age 35, 17th year overall, coming off the most significant injury of his career. There's what he accomplished as a player this year, which is astonishing. But what's the title say about LeBron as a leader and his evolution in that regard?
I mean, it says enormous things. It makes a strong statement about his leadership. And look, we knew he was a strong leader coming into all this. He took on a Cavaliers team that had an unproven talent in Kyrie Irving, a guy that's won nothing in the playoffs in Kevin Love, a bunch of other pieces that have been on some bad Cavaliers team, and elevated them into a championship. So his leadership in general was beyond reproach. But everything the Lakers went through, from the day Kobe Bryant passed away in that crash to the end of the season, from the stoppage to the social justice issues, to the stoppage, again, mid-bubble. Like, LeBron took a leadership role within that team the entire time, and players looked to him for an example. He said it. So, you know, I thought coming into all this, he was a proven leader, but I think he did elevate himself in that regard over the last, let's say, 10 months of this turbulent Lakers season.
Talking to Chris Mannix for a few more moments. So, Chris, like, ranking NBA titles can be like a really strange exercise, but if you were to rank LeBron's four championships, where does this one rank?
Oh, it's number two, right behind the Cleveland championship. I mean, nothing will ever surpass what happened in Cleveland to win a title in a city that, you know, it was half a century since they last won a title, to do it in the way that they did it, coming back from 3-1 down against, you know, statistically, the best team in NBA history. That, I mean, nothing will ever touch that. But this is far more significant than what he did in Miami, winning a championship against Oklahoma City in 2012, winning against the Spurs in 2013. I mean, this is the second most significant accomplishment of his career. And if not for the overall significance of what happened in Cleveland, this would be a pretty clear number one. In fact, I think the only thing it really competes with, Jim, is Game 6 in the conference finals against Boston in 2012. You remember that? Like, the year before, they lost in the finals. They were down 3-2 to Boston in that conference finals. And if they had lost that game six, oh, man, it could have been bad for LeBron in Miami. The he can't win anything brigade would have been out in full force. But LeBron went out there, and I was at that game. He had just one of the most incredible playoff performances of his career, of anybody's career, and put that team on his back to win in the Garden and force a game seven that they eventually won. So I think the three most significant team accomplishments of LeBron's career are the Cleveland title, this title, and that's a close third is what happened in that game against Boston.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, Chris, so what about Miami? Quickly, where do the Heat go from here?
Well, you run the whole thing back if you can. You try to get Goran Dragic on a short-term deal. You've got Robinson, you've got Hero, you've got Adebayo, you got Butler, all these guys signed to long-term deals. But you don't go out there and sign anybody that would be beyond next season, because you have your eye on the biggest prize in free agency in 2021, that's Giannis. And if you're Miami, you have submitted the best audition you can possibly have for Giannis. You beat him in the playoffs in 5 games, and then you went on and gave LeBron the toughest test he could have in the finals. You can't make any stronger case to Giannis that, look, you come down to our team, embrace our system, live on South Beach, we can win a championship with you. So you run the whole thing back if you can next year, and then you go out there and try to bring in that next superstar in 2021.
All right, so last thought, Chris. I would imagine it would be nice for you to have a breath or two, kind of relax. I hate to hit you with this, but what is your sense as to when the new season will start? What is the plan going forward? The NBA did such an amazing job within the bubble, and I think other leagues can follow suit, but when do they run this thing back and start up again?
Well, it's an incredibly fluid situation, Jim. It really is, because everything is predicated on the league's ability to get back into arenas. If the league sees a pathway to get into arenas, either through a vaccine or some form of rapid testing that's readily available, they'll push the season back to February, even March. If it doesn't look like that's going to be feasible, I could see the league going into regional bubbles, not one big bubble, but regional bubbles, as early as January. I don't think anything starts before January. You might get training camp opening up maybe just after Christmas or early January, but everything is going to be dependent on what the landscape looks like in terms of arenas. We know, Jim, 40% of that league revenue comes from fans and the gate revenue they provide. The NBA is not going to just ignore that. They're going to find any way possible to get as many games in as they can in their arenas, and they're probably going to be willing to wait as long as they have to do it.
So, my brother, what are you going to do now? You finally bust out of the bubble. You might get a moment or two, but the world has changed. You can't go running off to an airport. Like, what do you do now?
Well, I mean, I just got my DAZN schedule. I'm basically on every weekend through the end of the year. So those planes will still be flying, Jim. I'll just have to be a little more careful when I get on them.
He is a boxing analyst for DAZN. He is an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. He is a senior writer for SI. Lots of things, and a very good friend of the program. Chris, great job. Appreciate you. Stay safe, and it's great to have you back.
Anytime, Jim.
Great job, dude. My man Chris Mannix is doing work. Lots of work.